2. Kelsier followed a thread of preservation, like a glowing tendril of mist, through the city. He made sure to look up periodically, confronting that force in the sky which had boiled through the mists there and was coming to dominate in every direction. Kelsier would not back down. He would not let this thing intimidate him again. He'd already killed one god. The second murder was always easier than the first. The tendril of preservation led him past shadowy tenements, through a slum that somehow looked even more depressing on this side, all crammed together, the souls of men packed in frightened lumps. His crew had saved this city, but many of the people Kelsier passed didn't seem to know it yet. Eventually, the tendril led him out broken city gates to the north, past rubble and corpses being slowly sorted. Past living armies and that fearsome army of Kolos, out beyond the city, and a short hike along the river to the lake? Luthadel was built not far from the lake that bore its name, though most of the city's populace determinedly ignored that fact. Lake Luthadel wasn't the swimming or sport kind of lake, unless you fancied bathing in a soupy sludge that was more ash than it was water. And good luck catching what few fish remained after centuries of residing next to a city full of half-starved ska. This close to the ash mounds, keeping the river and lake navigable, had demanded the full-time attention of an entire class of people, the canal workers. A strange breed of ska who rarely mixed with those from the city proper. They would have been horrified to find that here on this side, the lake, and actually the river as well, was inverted somehow. Opposite to the way the mists under his feet had a liquid feel to them, the lake rose into a solid mound, only a few inches high, but harder and somehow more substantial than the ground he'd become used to walking upon. In fact, the lake was like a low island, rising from the sea of mists. What was solid and what was fluid seemed somehow reversed in this place. Kelsier stepped up to the island's edge, the ribbon of preservation's essence curling past him and leading onto the island, like a mythical string showing the way home from the grand maze of Ishathon. Kelsier stuffed his hands in his trouser pockets and kicked at the ground of the island. It was some type of dark, smoky stone. "What?" Preservation whispered. Kelsier jumped, then glanced at the line of light. "You? In there, Fuzz?"
"I'm everywhere," Preservation said, his voice soft, frail.
He sounded exhausted.
"Why have you stopped?"
"This is different."
"Yes, it congeals here," Preservation said. "It has to do with the way men think and where they are likely to pass. Somewhat to do with that, at least."
"But what is it?" Kelsier said, stepping up onto the island. Preservation said nothing further, and so Kelsier continued toward the center of the island. Whatever had congealed here, it was strikingly stone-like. And things grew on it. Kelsier passed scrubby plants sprouting from the otherwise hard ground, not misty, inchoate plants, but real ones, full of color. They had broad, brown leaves with, curiously, what seemed like mist rising from them. None of the plants reached higher than his knees, but there was still far more than he'd expected to find here. As he passed through a field of the plants, he thought he caught something scurrying between them, rustling leaves in its passing. "The world of the dead has plants and animals," he thought. But that wasn't what Preservation had called it. The cognitive realm. How did these plants grow here? What watered them? The farther he penetrated onto this island, the darker it became. Ruin was covering up that tiny sun, and Kelsier began to miss even the faint glow that had permeated the phantom mists in the city. Soon he was traveling in what seemed like twilight. Eventually, Preservation's ribbon grew thin, then vanished. Kelsier stopped near its tip, whispering, "Buzz, you there?" No response, the silence refuting Preservation's claim earlier that he was everywhere. Kelsier shook his head. Perhaps Preservation was listening, but wasn't there enough to give a reply. Kelsier continued forward, passing through a place where the plants had grown to waist height, mist rising from their broad leaves like steam from a hot plate. Finally, ahead, he spotted light. Kelsier pulled up. He'd fallen into a prowl, naturally, led by instincts gained from a life spent on the con, literally since the day of his birth. He had no weapons. He knelt, feeling at the ground for a stone or stick, but these plants weren't big enough to provide anything substantial, and the ground was smooth, unbroken. Preservation had promised him help, but he wasn't sure how much he trusted what Preservation said. Odd that living through his own death should make him more hesitant to trust in God's word. He took off his belt for a weapon, but it evaporated in his hands and appeared back on his waist. Shaking his head, he prowled closer, approaching near enough to the fire to pick out two people. Alive, and in this realm, not glowing souls or misty spirits. The man wore ska clothing, suspenders, shirt with sleeves rolled up, and tended a small dinner fire. He had short hair and a narrow, almost pinched face. That knife at his belt, nearly long enough to be a sword, would come in very handy. The other person, who sat on a small folding chair, might have been Terrace. There were some among their population who had a skin tone almost as dark as hers, though he'd also met some people from the various southern dominances who were dark. She certainly wasn't wearing Terrace clothing. She had on a sturdy brown dress with a large leather girdle around the waist and wore her hair woven into tiny braids. Two. He could handle two, couldn't he? Even without allomancy or weapons. Regardless, best to be careful. He hadn't forgotten his humiliation at the hands of the Drifter. Kelsier made a careful decision, then stood up, straightened his coat, and strode into their camp. "Well," he proclaimed, "this has been an unusual few days, I can tell you that." The man at the fire scrambled backward, hand on his knife, gaping. The woman remained seated, though she reached for something at her side. A little tube with a handle on the bottom. She pointed it toward him, treating it like some kind of weapon. "So," Kelsier said, glancing at the sky with its shifting, writhing mass of two solid tendrils, "anyone else bothered by the voracious force of destruction in the air above us?"
"Shadows!" the man shouted. "It's you! You're dead!"
"Depends on your definition of dead," Kelsier said, strolling over to the fire. The woman trailed him with that odd weapon of hers. "What in the blazes are you burning for that fire?" He looked up at the two of them. "What?"
"How?" the man sputtered. "What? When?"
"Why?" Kelsier added helpfully.
"Yes, why?"
"I have a very delicate constitution, you see," Kelsier said, "and death seemed like it would be rather bad for the digestion, so I decided not to participate."
"One doesn't merely decide to become a shadow," the man exclaimed.
He had a faintly strange accent, one Kelsier couldn't place.
"It's an important rite, with requirements and traditions. This is..."
He threw his hands into the air.
"This is a bother."
Kelsier smiled, meeting the gaze of the woman, who reached for a cup of something warm on the ground beside her. With her other hand, she tucked her weapon away, as if it had never been there. She was perhaps in her mid-30s.
"The survivor of Hathsin," she said, musing.
"You seem to have me at a disadvantage," Kelsier said. "One problem with notoriety, unfortunately."
"I should assume there are many disadvantages to fame for a thief. One doesn't particularly wish to be recognized while trying to lift pocketbooks."
"Considering how he's regarded by the people of this domain," the man said, still watching Kelsier with a wary eye, "I'd expect them to be delighted to discover him robbing them."
"Yes," Kelsier said dryly. "They practically lined up for the privilege."
"Must I repeat myself?"
She considered.
My name is Chris of Taldane.
She nodded toward the other man, and he reluctantly replaced his knife.
That is Naj, a man in my employ.
Excellent, Kelsier said. Any idea why Preservation would tell me to come talk to you?
Preservation?
Naj said, stepping up and seizing Kelsier's arm. So, as with the Drifter, they could indeed touch Kelsier.
You've spoken directly with one of the Shards?
Sure, Kelsier said. Buzz and I go way back. He pulled his arm free of Naj's grip and grabbed the other folding stool from beside the fire. Two simple pieces of wood that folded together, a piece of cloth between them to sit on. He settled it across from Chris and sat down.
I don't like this, Chris, Naj said. He's dangerous.
Fortunately, she replied, so are we. The Shard Preservation Survivor. How does he look?
Is that a test to see if I've actually spoken with him? Kelsier said. Or a sincere question as to the creature's status?
Both.
He's dying, Kelsier said, spinning Naja's knife in his fingers. He'd palmed it during their altercation a moment ago and was curious to find that, though it was made of metal, it didn't glow. He's a short man with black hair, or he used to be. He's been, well, unraveling.
Hey!
Naj said, eyes narrowing at the knife. He looked at his belt and the empty sheath.
Hey!
Unraveling, Chris said. So, a slow death. A.T. doesn't know how to splinter another shard, or he hasn't the strength.
A.T.? Kelsier asked. Preservation mentioned that name, too. Chris pointed at the sky with one finger while she sipped at her drink.
That's him. What he's become, at least.
And what is a shard? Kelsier asked.
Are you a scholar, Mr. Survivor?
No, he said. But I've killed a few.
Cute. Well, you've stumbled into something far, far bigger than you, your politics, or your little planet.
Bigger than you can handle, Survivor, Naj said, swiping back his knife as Kelsier balanced it on his finger. You should just bow out now.
Naj does have a point, Chris said. Your questions are dangerous. Once you step behind the curtain and see the actors as the people they are, it becomes harder to pretend the play is real.
Kelsier leaned forward, clasping his hands before him. Hell, that fire was warm, but it didn't seem to be burning anything. He stared at the flames and swallowed. I woke up from death after having deep down expected there to be no afterlife. I found that God was real, but that he was dying. I need answers. Please.
Curious, she said.
He looked up, frowning.
I have heard many stories of you, Survivor, she said. They often laud your many admirable qualities. Sincerity is never one of those.
I can steal something else from your manservant, Kelsier said, if it will make you feel more comfortable that I am what you expected.
You can try,
Naj said, walking around the fire, folding his arms and obviously trying to look intimidating.
The shards, Chris said, drawing Kelsier's attention, are not God, but they are pieces of God. Ruin, preservation, autonomy, cultivation, devotion. There are 16 of them.
16, Kelsier breathed. There are 14 more of these things running around?
The rest are on other planets.
Kelsier blinked.
Other planets. Ah, see? Naj said. You've broken him already, Chris.
Other planets, she repeated gently. Yes, there are dozens of them. Many are inhabited by people much like you or me. There is an original, shrouded and hidden somewhere in the Cosmere. I've yet to find it, but I have found stories. Anyway, there was a god, Adonalsium. I don't know if it was a force or a being, though I suspect the latter. 16 people together killed Adonalsium, ripping it apart and dividing its essence between them, becoming the first who ascended.
Who are they? Kelsier said, trying to make sense of this.
A diverse group, she said, with equally diverse motives. Some wished for the power, others saw killing Adonalsium as the only good option left to them. Together they murdered a deity and became divine themselves.
She smiled in a kindly way, as if to prepare him for what came next.
Two of those created this planet's survivor, including the people on it.
So, my world and everyone I know, Kelsier said, is the creation of a pair of half-gods?
More like fractional gods, Naj said, and ones with no particular qualifications for deityhood, other than being conniving enough to murder the guy who had the job before.
Oh, hell, Kelsier breathed. No wonder we're all so bloody messed up.
Actually, Chris noted, people are generally like that, no matter who made them. If it's any consolation, Adonalsium originally created the first humans. Therefore, your gods had a pattern to use.
So we're copies of a flawed original, Kelsier said. Not terribly comforting. He looked upward. And that thing? It used to be human?
The power distorts, Chris said. There's a person in that somewhere directing it, or perhaps just riding it at this point.
Kelsier remembered the puppet Ruin had presented, the shape of a man, now basically a shell, filled with a terrible power. So, what happens if one of these things dies?
I'm very curious to see, Chris said. I've never viewed it in person, and the past deaths were different. They were each a single stunning event. The god's power shattered and dispersed. This is more like a strangulation, while those were like a beheading. This should be very instructive.
Unless I stop it, Kelsier said. She smiled at him. Don't be patronizing, Kelsier snapped, standing up, the stool falling down behind him. I am going to stop it.
This world is winding down, Survivor, Chris said. It is a true shame, but I know of no way to save it. I came with the hopes that I might be able to help, but I can't even reach the physical realm here any longer.
Someone destroyed the gateway inn, Naj noted. Someone incredibly foolhardy, brash, stupid, didn't...
You're overselling it, Kelsier said. The Drifter told me what I did.
The... who?
Chris asked. Fellow with white hair, Kelsier said. Lanky, with a sharp nose and...
Damn, Chris said. Did he get to the Well of Ascension?
Stole something there, Kelsier said. A bit of metal.
Damn, Chris said, looking at her servant. We need to go. I'm sorry, Survivor.
But this isn't because of what you just told us, she said, rising and waving for Naj to help gather their things.
We were leaving anyway. This planet is dying. As much as I wish to witness the death of a shard, I don't dare risk doing it from up close. We'll observe from afar.
Preservation thought you'd be able to help, Kelsier said. Surely there is something you can do. Something you can tell me. It can't be over.
I am sorry, Survivor, Chris said softly. Perhaps if I knew more, perhaps if I could convince the Eyrie to answer my questions.
She shook her head.
It will happen slowly, Survivor, over months, but it is coming. Ruin will consume this world, and the man once known as Eti won't be able to stop it. if he even cared to. Everything, Kelsier whispered. Everything I've known. Every person on my planet.
Nearby, Naj bent down and picked up the fire, making it vanish. The oversized flame just folded up upon itself in his palm, and Kelsier thought he saw a puff of mist when it did so. Kelsier picked up his stool with one finger, unscrewed the bolt on the bottom, and palmed it into his hand before handing the stool to Naj. Naj then tugged on a hiking pack tied with scroll cases across the top. He looked to Chris.
Stay, Kelsier said, turning back to Chris. Help me. Help you? I can't even help myself, Survivor. I'm in exile, and even if I weren't, I wouldn't have the resources to stop a shard. I probably should never have come.
She hesitated.
And I'm sorry, but I cannot invite you to come with us. The eyes of your god will be upon you, Kelsier. He'll know where you are, as you have pieces of him within. It has been dangerous enough to speak here with you.
Naj handed her a pack, and she slung it over her shoulder.
I am going to stop this, Kelsier told them.
Chris lifted a hand and curled her fingers in an unfamiliar gesture, bidding him farewell, it seemed. She turned away from the clearing and strode away into the brush. Naj followed. Kelsier sank down. They'd taken the stools, so he settled onto the ground, bowing his head.
This is what you deserve, Kelsier, a piece of him thought. You wish to dance with the divine and steal from gods. Should you now be surprised that you found yourself in over your head?
The sound of rustling leaves made him scramble back to his feet. Naj emerged from the shadows. The shorter man stopped at the perimeter of the abandoned camp, then cursed softly before stepping forward and removing his side knife, sheath and all, and handing it to Kelsier. Hesitant, Kelsier accepted the leather-bound weapon.
It's a bad state you and yours are in, Naj said softly. But I rather like this place. Damnable mists and all.
He pointed westward.
They've set up out there.
They?
The Eyrie, he said. They've been at this far longer than we have, Survivor. If someone will know how to help you, it will be the Eyrie. Look for them where the land becomes solid again.
Solid again, Kelsier said. Lake Tyrion?
Beyond. Far beyond, Survivor.
The ocean? That's miles and miles away. Past Farmost.
Naj patted him on the shoulder, then turned back to hike after Chris.
Is there hope? Kelsier called.
What if I told you no? Naj said over his shoulder. What if I said I figured you were damn well ruined, so to speak? Would it change what you were going to do?
No.
Naj raised his fingers to his forehead in a kind of salute.
Farewell, Survivor. Take care of my knife. I'm fond of it.
He vanished into the darkness. Kelsier watched after him, then did the only rational thing. He ate the bolt he'd taken from the bottom of the stool.